Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online, sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes or using that podcast app. And then actually found out there's an app on the Samsung phones, those are Androids, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Android phones called Podcast Player, I think, or something like that. And you can actually subscribe to the show there, too. So if you have a Samsung, if you have an iPhone, you can listen to the show very, very easily and get it sent right to you. We're actually sitting right now kind of on the banks of the Rainy River here up here at Lake of the Woods. Joe Henry is joining us. We're sitting here at a cabin at Ballard's. We've been up here filming for Prairie Sportsman. And Joe, this has been, you know, one of the things I enjoy about doing this job with Prairie Sportsman, filming this TV show, and some outdoors television is all about going out there and catching limits or shooting a big buck, this and that. We're out there trying to find stories, and we got maybe some of the neatest stories that I've had the chance to listen to over the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's certainly more of a cultural piece about the area and about the history of Lake of the Woods versus going out and whacking a bunch of walleyes, you know, and it's kind of cool. I told you this last night, you know, we're coming back, but, you know, yesterday was one of those days that we had the opportunity to interview some people that had been around Lake of the Woods for a good long time. And it was very much an honor to be able to sit down with these people and to hear these stories of the old days of when they first started. And I'll tell you, a lot of things were impressed upon me. You know, one of the things certainly is that, you know, if you're a resort owner, just like today, but certainly back in the day, you had to be a worker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting up at 4 a.m, going out to fish houses, drilling the holes out every morning, lighting the stoves.
Chiseling out the house.
Chiseling
the holes
in some cases,
sometimes.
Coming back in, making sure we've got coffee and has had breakfast, and 7 o'clock, taking them out. And then, I mean, just the stories go on and on. And boy, Brett, we heard a lot of good ones yesterday, didn't we?
We really did. And that's what we wanted to find out, what it was like 40, 50, 60, 100 years ago up here. Because some of these places up here, Joe, go back to the late 1800s.
Yeah. We spent some time in a boat yesterday with Ed and Jack Arneson of Arneson's Rocky Point. And you want to talk about history going back to 1897.
Yeah.
You know, they started out as a commercial fishing operation and then morphed into a very, very successful, nice, you know, sports fishing resort as it is now. And it was really a cool day. And you know what? Hey, it was kind of fun being out in the boat. There was a little bit of a chop. Literally went out of the harbor, turned left, went to 19 feet of water, turned the key off, drifted and caught walleyes, jumbo perch. I mean, it was just... You know, it's stupid.
Yeah, and a slot fish. And, you know, that was the thing you hear about. You go out in a boat with somebody like that that's been on the lake for as long as the Arnesons have. And it was literally, are we going to go to a secret spot? He's going to find this rock pile that nobody knows about out here. No, went to 19 feet, started drifting.
Yeah.
Caught fish.
We caught fish right away.
Boom.
Well, you know, we're drifting spinners yesterday. And it was kind of cool because, yeah, you know, we filmed. So we had the Arneson boys in the back of that sport craft. And, you know, we're doing some filming and stuff for the show. But, you know, all along we had lines in the water. We're picking at them. Of course, afterwards, we have to go into the Rock Harbor Lodge and have a fresh fish fry. And,
oh, man.
You know, a couple of Diet Cokes, I guess you'd call them. And,
yeah, but, something like that.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, it was pretty cool.
Talking with Joe Henry here on Sporting Journal Radio. We're at Lake of the Woods right now. Not only did we get to talk to some of the, I don't want to call them old timers necessarily, but the guys with the wisdom and experience on the lake. How about that? The guys that have been here forever. But we got to see a lot of the different lodges. I've been into a lot of the different resorts in the last couple of days that I hadn't been into before. And sometimes you just don't really realize some of these, you'll hear a name maybe. I'm like, oh yeah, that place is down the road. I haven't been in there. And then you walk into it, it's like, wow, this place is really nice.
Yep. You know, yesterday we were in three different resorts. And you know, when we do a show like this, there are dozens of people that we could have contacted.
Mm-hmm.
for the sake of how much time we have to put on the TV show. You know, we have to kind of pick and choose. So in this case, we were at Ballard's, and then we ended up, we had Steve Ballard at Ballard's, and then we went over and spoke to Mike Truman, formerly of Border View Lodge, and then we went and saw the Arneson boys. So that's for starters. And, you know, one thing I'll say about Lake of the Woods resorts, and I have the privilege of working with all of them, and, you know, I tell people, Every resort has its own culture. Mm-hmm. You know what? If you want to go and do the full service thing, if you want a little bit nicer, if you want a little bit more home style, do you want log cabin-y? Do you want salad bar and prime rib? You know, do you want to go to a cute little place that makes their own hand-pressed cheeseburgers and has, you know, all-you-can-eat tacos? I mean, you know, every place has its own little culture. And depending upon who you're with and what your style is, there's a lot of cool places to choose from. It's kind of neat, even yourself, Brett, being, you know, very privy to Lake of the Woods. You see new places and you're like, holy smokes, look at that.
Right. You know, and honestly, my experience on Lake of the Woods has been almost exclusively staying at places on the river.
Yeah.
So to go out and see what Rocky Point looked like and see what Arneson's and see that sunset come down over the lake, I mean, it's a beautiful, a new place to the lake for me.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because over on the Arneson's Rocky Point faces that west, and you know, when that sun sets and it's a clear night, that comes across just like an ocean. It comes across Lake of the Woods. And of course, their Rock Harbor Lodge, their restaurant and bar, is set up so all the windows are facing that sunset. So, yep. I mean, it's a million-dollar view. And last night, of course, we were very privy to that. And it was just a special day. I can't say enough about it. And, you know, it's fun, too. You know, you go back to the lodge, you know, and tie the boat up, and you got people coming in. How'd you guys do? Yeah, we whacked them today. You know, we got our biggest was 28 and a half, and we saw a picture of a little Madeline Arneson, Mark Arneson's daughter.
Yeah.
You know, 9 years old, holding up a walleye that's bigger than she is practically. Yeah. It's on her Facebook page, but unbelievable.
And caught it herself, reeled it in herself, 9 years old, bigger. It took me 35 years to catch a fish that big. Nine years old, and she's got it. Of course.
Well, she's got the gene pool going too, doesn't she?
Gene pool and Lake of the Woods, of course, right. Especially a lake to be living on. And Joe, obviously Lake of the Woods tourism, you've been coming up before you were with tourism. You've been coming up here for many years before that. You know the lake well, you know the area well. You got to hear some stories. You got to hear some things, I bet, that you'd never heard of before.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've heard a lot of stories, but you know, one of the reasons you and I had spoken about doing this show was because there are so many stories out there that are so cool that speak to the history of Lake of the Woods. And, you know, whether you're somebody that comes to Lake of the Woods, whether you're a historian, whether it's just kind of a human interest piece where you hear the people talk about these things and you see their look and you hear their accent and you think about their history and they talk about their grandparents and they talk about, I mean, it's just a myriad of fishing, of Lake of the Woods, of history, of culture, of coming to the United States for their ancestors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Rocky Point, you know, their great, great grandfather or what, but they, you know, how did they get there? They walked. They walked to Rocky Point. That's the first, you know?
Yeah. So, and when I heard the story, I couldn't believe it because, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Back then, he didn't have, you know, half-ton pickups he could jump in and drive across the state, you know? But he's like, yeah, you know, he walked from the Red River Valley. And I was like, well, where in the Red River Valley? And he was talking about that Warren Alvarado area where his ancestors settled. They came down from Canada and settled there. And I said, my great-grandparents came down from Canada and settled in that Warren Alvarado area. So their ancestors and my ancestors might have been neighbors.
It's amazing, you know. You start talking around, and but to your point, I mean, you don't think about things like that. And when you think mm-hmm. about the history, it's like, oh my goodness, just really for me, even getting around to all the resorts all the time, really an honor to hear those stories yesterday and to be able to think about them and share them and be in the presence of some people that are certainly Lake of the Woods icons. You know, there's a lot more people that could be put in that category as well.
Absolutely.
So understand, we couldn't get to everybody, but. But the folks we did speak to yesterday, really quality individuals, really just some neat conversations.
Yeah, and they're, you know, kind of a sampling of some of those other people that are out there as well that really have made the lake and the look of the lake and the way things are here. It is the way it is because of these people.
Absolutely. They forged the way. Yep. And they're the innovators. They're the ones that came up with a way to get people safely out in the ice and warmly out in the ice. They're the ones that came up with, all right, how do we build a big fish house that we can pull that's going to be easier to pull? Well, let's start out by building a good platform with skids, and then we're going to put Hyphax on the skids. And I mean, all these different nuances. They didn't just happen. It's through trial and error.
Joe Henry is our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Lake of the Woods Tourism. We're on the Rainy River right now, Ballard's Resort. We got to go to a number of resorts while we were up here and talked to some of these guys. We're filming for Prairie Sportsman for an episode that's going to air early 2019. And Joe, I want you to pick out a story or two that we kind of heard yesterday that we can kind of share on the radio show here so we can tell people some of these specific things that we talked about. So more with Joe Henry coming up here from Lake of the Woods on Sporting Journal Radio.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the northwest angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
All right, we're back, Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. Online, sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes and on your phones. You can subscribe in the various podcasts apps on your phones. Oh, gosh. It's been a long couple of days, Joe. It's been, sometimes speaking isn't always the easiest thing to do. And we're talking about Lake of the Woods and the history of Lake of the Woods. We're up here filming for Prairie Sportsman Television. And we'd been talking about doing this show for a long time because of the rich history that's in this area and the people that are here. And, you know, it's kind of nice to do something like this because you're able to preserve some of those stories. And obviously stories will get passed down through generations. But when we can take some of the people that we sat down with and get stories from them, pull some of that history from the people that lived it, that know it, that created it, and preserve it. I mean, this is something I think, you know, people that generations down the line here at Lake of the Woods will enjoy watching.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, yes. And those are the stories that, you know, maybe family and friends get to hear, but that's very, very rich, heartfelt content that, it's one thing to read something in a book. It's another thing to see somebody in video or to hear them and their voice and how they talk about it. And some really, really rich history. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, it doesn't matter if you fish Lake of the Woods or don't fish Lake of the Woods. It's about history of fishing, of the resort industry in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It's about people forging a way of life, starting a business, family business. Family members participate in. It's about tragedy along the way and some of the hardships they faced. I mean, you know, you asked me about some of the things that it kind of resonated with me. A lot of stories resonated with me. You know, one of them was how the Arnis boys were talking about how some of the natives would come across from Canada,
yeah,
and they would trade goods with them. So they'd bring goods over and they'd trade for fish. And that was kind of a cool one. You know, the other one I kind of liked is how the Arnesons were talking about when their, I guess their father was out on the ice netting and got caught in a whiteout and had no idea which way the resort was. And he told those horses to go home. And of course, those horses led him back to the resort. You know, so many stories like that just really, really impactful.
Well, and that Arneson family, so it was Barney Arneson that arrived. He was born in Norway in 1871 and then arrived at Rocky Point in 1897. Just think of the journey he had before he walked to Lake of the Woods from the Red River Valley. Hey, guys, I'm going to go for a hike. I'm going to go look for Lake of the Woods.
Well, and, you know, think about how much or how little he perhaps knew.
Sure.
How good were the maps? How much did they know about Lake of the Woods? How much did they know about that shoreline? what you know, did he go there with the intent of starting a fishing operation? If that's the case, how old did he know commercial fishing? Did he do it in Norway? Did his ancestors do it? I mean, that, you know, those are the kind of things that you think about. Oh, he walked, and that's how they settled Arnesens. But when you really dig into it, my goodness, imagine us doing that right now in a remote area of Canada and just no way. I mean, that would be crazy.
Well, and they were one of the first people there. I think Zippels were there, and maybe some other settlers had been around. But Arnesens, it sounds like, became kind of the hub for the area. They had a store. They had a they were a post office, I guess, at one point. And they were delivering the mail to them across the lake.
Well, that, and that's why they said, too, sometimes if you look at some older maps, they'll show the community of Arneson. And the reason they show the community of Arneson, because they used to have a post office there.
Yeah, it's so crazy to think about how this area around Lake of the Woods looks now and just what it was like 100 years ago. And sitting down with Steve Ballard, too, here at Ballard's, and I always give him a hard time because with Keith and then also Nick Anthony, who's a part of Ballard's, being Gophers, hockey players, winning national championships, and me being a Gopher fan, and then taking bus trips full of UND Sioux fans over here fighting Hawks or whatever, coming over here. And then it was always just like this rivalry on the bus coming over here between Gophers fans and Sioux fans. And we were sitting there talking to Steve for the show. And I said, I don't know how you allow Sioux fans in here, Steve. And he starts laughing and goes, well, I paid for 4 years of education for my daughter to go to UND. So I guess it's okay.
That's what Jesse said, yeah.
Yeah, so.
It was pretty cool. I thought it was kind of cool when you asked him, so did you ever... did you ever have like hockey rinks out in front of the resort on the river ice here? Every day. Yeah, no, we plowed that out. And then he was kind of fun too, because we're asking him about Keith, and he said, yeah, Keith said he was a, and I don't know Keith personally, but you know, he said he was one of the best boat boys or dock boys they ever had. And truth be known, he was watching ESPN, probably looking for a hockey while he's looking down at the docks.
Yeah.
But he was always so in tune with the sports and the hockey, and, it really kind of a neat story about how that whole thing progressed as well.
You think about Joe Henry, our guest, by the way, Sporting Journal Radio. We're at Lake of the Woods right now talking about the history, filming for an episode of Prairie Sportsman, which will air early 2019. And you think about all the different resorts up here and all the different guides and outfitters and services and businesses. And there's definitely some competition. But when you talk to some of these guys like Steve and then Mike Truman, and you talk about, you know, just what they went through and how you kind of have to work together. You can be competitive, and obviously you have a business to run, but you kind of have to work together up here.
Yeah, you know, and I think and listen to some of the guys yesterday talk, it was especially more that way back in the day when everything was smaller, when resorts were smaller and you only had a few boats or you had a couple of ice rigs. If one would break down, you needed help from your neighbor, and they would reach out, and hence they have the relationships today in many cases. So now, you know, they talked about resorts being larger, a little bit more self-sustainable. They got more employees to help, you know, fill the gaps when there's something happening. And, you know, it's just interesting how things progress. But yes, it's interesting too how, you know, Mike Truman and Steve Ballard are still buddies. They go on trips and stuff together, and, you know, to this day. And of course, you know, they both spoke about other people in the area who were very instrumental in helping them get through and I guess make it as a resort owner in Lake of the Woods in the early days.
Yeah, and we kind of went around to some other places, and we were flying the drone around, and we got Dylan here from Prairie Sports when he was flying the drone, and while he was doing that, I was stopping in at some different places and just walked into Wigwam, and there was pictures on the wall from the resort there back in 1916, and you know, it was one of the first places, I think, along there, and just to see how it looked then and how it looked now, and this, honestly, probably the biggest thing that I wanted to find out is I know when I jump in a boat now, especially when I go out on a guided trip somewhere and the guy's got a, you know, a 20-foot Ranger or whatever and 19-inch electronic screens, you know, and three of them across the boat. He's got side scan and down scan, all this stuff, and it's great. It's fun to use. But imagine running a guide business, you know, 40, 50 years ago and having none of that stuff.
And they didn't. You know, it was fun to hear about how did you know where that reef was?
Right.
Well, you know, a lot of times what we do is we'd mark up the big elm tree that's on that island to the pine tree over on that island. And then we'd, you know, we'd come out, we know about where it is. And a lot of times what you do is sometimes we even tied a brick onto a thin rope and we put it down there and kind of dragged it until we hit rock. And then we knew we were on the reef. So once we got to the top of the reef, we threw a great big Hilux jug that we painted red. We had a brick on that. We threw that out to market, and then we just kind of work around on Hilux jug.
Could you imagine going on a trip now somewhere, and the guide all of a sudden just takes out a brick and starts tying a rope around it?
Yeah.
What are you doing? But yeah, they'll take weights and just kind of drag them along the bottom until they find feel some structure down there. Like, oh.
Well, it was also interesting hearing about how they used to fish. And in many cases, they were using a sinker and a spinner with a form of live bait, oftentimes minnows.
Yeah.
It was normally a minnow. And that's how they fish a lot. They would drift or troll with a sinker and spinner and minnows. I'll tell you what, to this day, a sinker and a spinner with maybe a crawler or a minnow is one of my go-to presentations when I'm fishing walleyes. I mean, it still works.
They had it figured out.
They kind of had it dialed in, didn't they?
It's funny, though, they weren't using shiners, though. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Arneson said they did. Steve Ballard said they purchased bait, so they got fatheads or chubs, as they called them.
Yeah.
And then Arneson said they were using shiners, and they also would purchase some bait, in many cases fatheads as well. So they used both. And but I think back then they said, too, you know, it was hard to keep shiners, and everybody wanted to use live bait. They didn't really freeze shiners back then, of course. They didn't have the capabilities to freeze. You know, wasn't it interesting to hear how Arnesons used to keep their fish? They'd go out when the ice was fairly thin, and they would cut ice blocks. They'd bring it into the ice house, and they'd pack it down with sawdust. And in many cases, that ice had to last them 1 year, in some cases 2 years. Now, during a hot Minnesota summer, that ice with sawdust over it in an ice house, just a normal house, not real big insulated or anything, that would last nearly 2 years. Think about that.
Until the area floods and it raises the ice sheet on the lake, and then the ice sheet came and knocked that building right off the foundation one time.
Yeah, and they had to rebuild. Yeah, that was a tough spring.
So much. I mean, we could sit here and talk, even just with the history of the Arnesons, I think we could sit here and talk for hours. And it was so neat getting the chance to meet those guys and Steve and Mike and everybody else that we met up here. So this is a fun trip. Watch for an episode of Prairie Sportsman starting in late January. So early 2019, late January through early May. And Joe, of course, fishing is, of course, we went out for 2 hours, caught a pile of fish. Fishing is great right now. People can come up here and catch fish right now.
Yep.
They can plan a winter trip. Where should they go to find out more information?
Yeah, you know what? Check out our website. We got a whole list of resorts and hotels and stuff on our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
From Lake of the Woods right now, thanks to everybody that we talked to and hosted us up here at Lake of the Woods. Joe, of course, thanks for having us up here once again.
Great trip.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, we're back. This is Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in. I found out that the podcast player, I think is what the app is called. You can get it on Android phones too, the Samsung phones and some of the other ones. So on iPhones, use the podcasts app that comes with your iPhone, or if you have one of the other ones, search your app store for podcast player, and you should be able to subscribe to this show and listen to it on your phone, get it delivered each week as well. Or, of course, listening to this radio station right here, 28 stations strong. Thank you, station, for carrying Sporting Journal Radio. And, of course, you can listen on demand at sportingjournalradio.com as well. So just spent a couple of days up at Lake of the Woods this week. Got some really cool stuff. We just talked to Joe Henry all about it. And our next guest has done some time up there with me doing some filming with Joe and just done some fishing a lot. He knows Lake of the Woods very well. He's now a licensed captain, able to guide up there. It's Jamie Dittman from the Brainerd area. Jamie, how are things?
Very good.
You know, I wish we could have done some more fishing up on Lake of the Woods, because Jamie, the fishing up there right now is ridiculous.
I believe next week, like the 11th down that area, is always the time we had the MTT championship up there.
Okay.
And yeah, it was always, you know, it took, without a catch and release tournament, just weighing your slot fish, it was, you know, some days 40 pounds a day to win, you know.
My gosh. Well, we started seeing all the boats that are all logoed up as the guys were pre-fishing for what the NWT, I believe, is up there this week. And, I mean, it's crazy how quickly, you know, how early those guys get up and start pre-fishing. When we left there on Thursday, we came home from Lake of the Woods, the wind was kicking up pretty hard, and those guys were out there trying to pre-fish in that wind. And I'll give them credit. Because that takes some dedication to go out there in that business.
You know, we always looked at it like, you know, depending on the amount of the tournament, how much time you would stick in. Like the championship was basically 40,000, so we would be up there for about 7 days.
Wow.
Pre-fishing.
Ah, man, that's crazy. You know,
a $5,000 tournament, a day or two.
Sure.
But,
sure.
So I think MWT is probably, you know, more money, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one. So that'll be interesting. I bet there's going to be some big, big bags up there for that tournament.
Yes.
So you're fishing a different tournament, though, this week, Jamie.
Next week, yep, the Frank Schneider Muskie Tournament.
Yeah, that's right. That's coming up on Saturday. When is that, Saturday or what?
The next Saturday, the 6th or something like that.
Yeah, so next week.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yep.
Yeah, very cool. And that tournament is interesting because it's basically a region, right?
Yeah, you have like five different regions to fish. We'll fish Bemidji. You can fish Bemidji, Irving, or Plantagenet.
Sure.
And we'll fish them.
And you guys got a 50-incher last year, didn't you?
2 years ago, we had a 51.5. Saw some last year, never got any of the boat, but we just caught some walleyes and had fish fry.
There you go.
We're the most unserious musky fishermen you ever met.
Well,
there's $8,000 worth of musky gear in the boat, and we're using jigging wraps and catching walleyes. So.
Well, it's funny. That's probably how you catch. These guys end up catching big muskies is accidentally jigging for walleyes, and you hook into some of those big fish sometimes, I think.
Oh, yeah. Last year, we were casting, and we went by an older guy in a boat, and he's like, should have been here 10 minutes ago. And he showed his picture. He caught a 48-incher fishing for perch, you know, with a bobber.
Wow. Man, how come stuff like that never happens to me?
Oh, never.
Yeah. We fished on Lake of the Woods. We got out with Ed and Jack Arneson. I'll tell you what. And, you know, Joe and I talked about this a little bit, so I won't get into it too much. But we fished with those two guys, and it was so cool listening to them and just watching them fish, because you just think about it. And I asked him as we went out of his little harbor there at Rocky Point, I asked him as we were pulling out into the lake, I said, Ed, how many times have you done this? And he just laughed and shook his head. You know, it's like how many thousands of times has he pulled a boat out that harbor and out into the lake? And we just went out and started drifting and caught fish. And I didn't even fish most of the time. I was just kind of interviewing those guys for the show, and they were snapping fish left and right. And then I finally fished. And I caught a small sauger that I ended up putting back. And those guys, you know, caught all kinds of bucket fish and then one in the slot, too, and filmed it all for Prairie Sportsman. So that's going to be cool. So I catch one small sauger. The lake is on fire. I catch one small sauger out there, and we come in, and two different people show us pictures of 9-year-old girls that have 28-inch walleyes this week. That's unbelievable. So Jamie Dittman is our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about Lake of the Woods and also the Frank Schneider Muskie Tournament coming up here next weekend. What else has been going on? You've been fishing around Brainerd or what?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's just starting to get good. The water temps are finally dropping, and, you know, the muskies are turning on Mille Lacs. There's been some nice muskies being caught and a lot of follows. So, you know, this is going to be prime time. We keep getting these cool nights. the walleyes are going to turn on. We start getting a crankbait bite. Weeds are still a little too high for that yet, but smallies are starting to pile up a little bit. So
yeah, I haven't even heard about Malak. I mean, I've been so detached. I've been in North Dakota. I've been at Lake of the Woods. I haven't been home at all, and I haven't heard much about Mille Lacs. It's been, are guys still catching walleyes over there or what?
Well, if you haven't heard, there's no walleyes in Mille Lacs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, that's right.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of nice fish being caught and a lot of real small fish. I mean, it's definitely going to look good.
Nice. All right. You know, it's funny. We talked about conservation so much on Lake of the Woods because of the talk about lowering restrictions. And when we talked to, lowering limits, when we talked about the history of Lake of the Woods, because that's what we were doing up there. And we heard about when they used to be able to guide on the Canadian side. So you could guide on the Canadian side and take a limit of fish from the Canadian side. And then you can come take a limit of fish from the American side. They used to pull a lot of fish out of that lake. And then they cut it down to 10 fish or whatever it was, and people were catching a lot of fish. Then they cut it down again, and then they ended commercial fishing, and the fishing changed, and then they implemented that slot, and that slot really changed things. Everybody I talked to, everybody had slightly different opinions on the regulation changes up there, but when they all agreed that implementing that slot limit was probably the best thing they could do up there, and boy, it sure shows this year, because the fish are incredible up there. But one interesting stat, Jamie, that I heard, and people that fish Lake of the Woods in Minnesota, this probably isn't a big surprise for them, but I can't remember if it was in the 80s. That's in the 80s is when the big winter fishing business really kicked in on the lake up there. And it was in the 80s or early 90s, I think they did an aerial survey and counted 500 houses on the lake in the winter. Guess how many were on there a few years ago?
Just on a survey in one day?
Yeah. Yeah.
1,400.
I think it was like 10,000.
Oh my God.
I could be off on the numbers, but I'm pretty sure it was like 500 to 10,000. There was 2 million fishing hours just last winter on Lake of the Woods. So,
well, if you talk to some of the guides up there, that'll live there a long time, they said they're not seeing, the fishing in front of the gap in Four Mile Bay, since that has started happening with the huge congregation of ice houses,
yeah,
they're not seeing the fish there anymore. They have to go out further now to get them.
Well, and I've asked guys about that, because it seems like as the winter goes on, you have to go further and further north up the lake. And I wondered if it was a natural migration or what it was. And I think it is all the pressure on the south end of the lake, all those lines dangling in the water. And fish are either escaping that pressure, they're getting caught, whatever. You have to move up and find some different fish or follow the fish up. But I tell you what.
And then if you get a year like last year where there wasn't a shiner run, they don't come in that far anyway. It sounds like this year, like there's going to be a shiner run,
It's starting. They're already starting to see shiners in the river right now while we were up there. We were hoping to go look under some of the lights, but we didn't make it out there after dark. But, man, it's a special place up there, and you did not have to go far into the lake to catch fish right now. Holy smokes, there's plenty of fish down there, but obviously a lot less pressure in the summertime versus the wintertime. All right, we talk a lot about Lake of the Woods. We don't have to keep talking about that. But Jamie Dittman, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's a guide in the Brainerd Lakes area. My point in all that, though, is we were talking about all the pressure on the lake, and the restrictions coming down and the limits coming down and this and that. Every once in a while, echoes of you could hear hints of what has happened on Mille Lacs and what's going on Mille Lacs. And, I don't think anybody thinks that will happen to Lake of the Woods, but they definitely look to that lake and look at it as an example of what could happen around here. And
no, I'm not sure, but didn't the fisheries guy from up there go down to Mille Lacs?
I believe he did, actually.
Yep.
So maybe
that's a good sign.
That is a good sign. So
he's done well up there.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to we should make a fall trip up there, Jamie, at some point. We should just sneak away and go up there and probably do some fishing.
I am just loaded up now. I have downriggers sitting here for the boat and 10 new tackle boxes of salmon gear.
You don't need that stuff up there.
The salmon are starting to move in.
Oh, are you going? You're going east or what?
Michigan, yeah.
Okay, all right.
They're starting to move in. I'm seeing pictures of boats, and you can see shoreline. So,
nice. All right. Well, keep us updated. Let us know how you're doing. Good luck in the muskie tournament, Jamie. We got to run here.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
All right. That's Jamie Dittman, Brainerd Lakes area. Go hire him as a guide.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman, and if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, this is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online, sportingjournalradio.com. And you can subscribe to that podcast in iTunes or with the podcast app on iPhones or with the podcast player app on Android, Samsung phones. You can actually subscribe to the show that way as well, too. All right, this weekend, early Canada goose season opens up in Minnesota. Also, the dove season opens up. We're going to talk about bird hunting now because it's that time of year. The air temperature is a little bit colder. Tony Crotty from Mid-Migration Outfitters joins us here on the show. And Tony, we're up at Lake of the Woods this week, and it was in the 40s in the mornings up there. It was nice.
I wish we had that around here.
Yeah, I'm ready. It's cooler this morning a little bit too, and it's getting to be fall. September is here.
Yeah, definitely is. And before we know it, we're gonna be wishing winter wasn't coming.
Yeah, well, winter's not so bad.
Yeah.
I like winter more than I like summer anyway.
Yeah, same.
But this weekend, of course, it's kind of an odd year as the September early Canada goose season in Minnesota, Tony, and the dove season open up on the same day.
Yeah, it is an odd year for both of them to open up, and it's going to be there's going to be a lot of people out hunting this weekend, we'll just say that.
That's what we're finding out.
Yes.
Because how many miles do you think you put on your vehicles in the last couple of weeks?
I don't know, a lot. Been driving around a lot, and yeah, I mean there's definitely a lot of people out scouting, which is good, and that's what people need to do. And a lot of people locking down fields and stuff, but running into, you know, stuff that's locked up for both dove hunters and goose hunters. And like I say, there's gonna be a lot of people out hunting this weekend, which is great.
Thankfully we got our spots, but boy, it's and we didn't really have a lot of bird numbers either for a while. They just kind of started showing up, didn't they?
Yeah, we, you know, I'm guessing they were molting or they were hiding and they just started to fly out. Fields have been picked recently and harvested. So that's why we're starting to see some numbers. But then again, I've talked to a couple of guys around the area and their birds have moved out. And
oh, good.
We've Perfect. Actually seen birds move in on us though.
Oh, good.
Oddly Perfect. Enough. Yeah.
That's good. Well, let's talk about geese for just a second. Let's talk about early Canada geese. Is there anything that you kind of do differently, or what do you look for during the September season for Canada geese when you say, yeah, okay, let's hunt that spot?
You know, I always try and play, you know, the hide game, which I guess everybody does all year long, but in the early season it seems even more important. You know, it sounds crazy and people might think I'm nuts for this, but if I drive past, say, you know, a quarter wheat field and it's all cut or dug and there's 70 birds out in the middle of it, more times than not I won't even waste my time with it. Just because them birds, you know, you're going to go out and set up, you got no place to hide and they're probably going to short you, you know, and you're going to waste your time. And, if that's the only thing you got, you know, there's ways to hunt it, hunting edges or making it look like, you know, you got a good hide out in the middle or looking like a clump of grass. But, the hide is the biggest thing.
Somebody was asking me about that this week, and how important the hide was versus some of the other factors. You know, what's more important, your spread, your calling, your hide? And I say, well, other than location, making sure that there's birds there, your hide is the most important thing.
Correct. I agree 100%. You know, especially this time of year, you don't really need a whole lot of calling. You know, you can use basically any type of decoy you want. The geese are, if they're there, they're going to be coming in, but it's just...
So are you saying I could use like a snow goose decoy when you...
You could try.
Any decoy. But yeah, you don't need a lot of decoys because you mentioned 70 birds. That might be a good number to hunt this time of year, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and from what I've been seeing in my experience lately, at least, you know, 70 birds is a good population depending on... you know, what kind of groups are coming out to field, things like that. But yeah, there's a lot of fields, you know, that got 10 or 15 and you find 70 or 100, you're kind of doing good.
So you get a good amount of birds. You got a field that has a decent hide in it, whether the wheat's a little bit taller and you can put layup lines in it, or maybe there's a field edge that you can hunt along. And then you set your decoys. How many decoys do you like to use?
You know, it kind of all depends on the situation. Most guys, you know, use that rule of thumb, try and set what's in the field. But, you know, we'll kind of change things up depending on, you know, what goes into it. And a lot of that goes into people's scouting. There's more to scouting than just driving around and finding geese in a field. You got to figure out where they're coming from, you know, what direction they're flying into the field, what the wind is, what the sun is. And that really dictates, in my opinion, a lot of how many decoys we're going to use, how we're going to set them, so on and so forth.
And when you're using full bodies, sometimes it's nice to use fewer because it takes longer to set up, they're harder to haul and things like that. But you don't necessarily use all full bodies anymore either.
No. We use a lot of silhouettes. It's kind of the trend lately. You know, things come and go like that. But we've been using silhouettes the past 2 years and shooting a lot of geese over them, and you know, until they stop working, that's probably what we'll continue to do.
I may be a little biased, but I feel like we kind of helped start that trend just a little bit. So I'm just saying.
There's a few guys out there that have definitely been doing that, but yeah, we've been one of the groups that have put them to the test, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've had some good luck over them. Tony Crotty is our guest, Mid-Migration Outfitters, here on Sporting Journal Radio, talking about the early Canada goose season opening up September 1st in Minnesota, along with the dove season. And we'll talk about doves here, too, in just a couple of minutes. But sticking with Canada geese here for just a minute, you mentioned you don't have to do a lot of calling either. And sometimes, you know, we've had some groups of, you know, 9 guys out there. When we were in North Dakota a couple of weeks ago, we had 9 guys out there who all, you know, knew how to run a goose call. But it's a good thing they all didn't run the goose call at the same time necessarily.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, we were hunting with, you know, a lot of our hunting buddies and our crowd of friends that we hunt with. And yeah, all of them can run calls pretty well, but it can turn into a sea of sound, a wall of sound. And a lot of times you can blow birds out of the field. And you can even do that in the late season when you're hunting bigger populations. But yeah, we usually pick one or two guys to call and the rest of the guys can just sit back and relax and wait, shoot.
Yeah, and especially with this time of year, the birds are young. They're not educated necessarily yet. It's like hunting juvie snow geese to some extent.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's going to be the mom and pops, and they usually just follow them in. And sometimes, they're just by themselves. It's pretty dumb for the most part.
I like it. I like it a lot. Okay, so there you go. Location number one, a lot of scouting, probably the most important thing to do. Find the birds, find out the pattern if you can, find out where they're feeding. And number two, the hide. Making sure that you have a good hide out there. 3, your decoy spread, natural, realistic, doesn't have to be giant. And then obviously the right amount of calling would be the keys to success for the early Canada goose season.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And then if you don't find geese, look for doves. That's number 5.
Yep.
Look for doves because the dove season is here. You don't always get a long time to hunt them here, do you?
No, you really don't. And we've actually had, driving around, I've seen quite a few good numbers of doves around, which is, you know, uncharacteristic. It seems the past couple of years, we seem to run out of doves before the season even starts around here, but they're around and I'm sure they'll be gone by next weekend though.
Yeah, probably. The temperature gets down into the 40s and they start heading south along with our blue-winged teal. But when you scout for doves, you're almost scouting for geese at the same time because they're using similar areas, right?
Yeah, for the most part, they're going to be in small grains. So I kind of kill 2 birds with 1 stone. If I pull up to a field and I glass it for geese, there's no geese in it. The first thing I do is check the power lines around the field. If there's doves on them, obviously there's going to be doves in the area. And usually, rule of thumb, in my opinion, if you find, say, 10 doves on the power line, there's probably going to be twice that many, at least in the field, just because they're going to be out feeding. And they're so hard to see in the field. But Yeah, if you find small grain trees and water, you'll find doves usually.
And the hide is important with doves. Some people don't think the hide is as important, and it's not as important maybe for Canada geese, but it's still important out there. You gotta be hidden to some extent.
Yep. Yeah, we like to be when we hunt doves. We'll try and hide, or you know, at least stay still. If you're sitting on an edge or on a bucket next to some trees, you know, stay still. Let them work into the spinners and decoys. Don't be flailing around.
And in this case, decoys may be more important than the hide. Those spinners play a big role, don't they?
Yeah, they really do. The doves, you know, they decoy into spinners. Not quite like ducks or, say, pigeons do. Most times they kind of fly at them and land around them. So that's kind of a learning curve there. But yeah, the spinners definitely get them a lot closer.
And you get one crack at them when they come through.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Yeah. So if you see them coming, get ready. That's the fun thing about doves, especially if you get into a field where there's a lot of them, you can get a lot of shooting. It might be like shooting at mosquitoes, you know, the way they fly and how small they are. It can be a challenge.
Yep. Yeah. I can't remember what it was, but it's like the bird of 10 shots or something like that. I can't remember what.
Bring a lot of shells. All right. Well, regular season opening up here in a couple of weeks. Of course, we'll be guiding around Lac Parle for ducks and geese all fall, putting a pit in. Pretty excited about that. Tony, if they want to come out and hunt with us this fall, where should they go to get more info?
They can go to the website. It's www.midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to head over to the North Dakota side of the Red River now and check in with Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department.
The 2018 Plots Guide is now available. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. The Private Land Open to Sportsman, or Plots Guide, for 2018, which features maps highlighting walk-in hunting areas as well as other public lands, is now available online at the Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov. In addition, printed copies of the free Plots Guides are available at most licensed vendors throughout the state, as well as Game and Fish district offices. The guide will feature more than 760,000 plots acres this year. Because the guide is printed in mid-August, Game and Fish will update plots map sheets weekly on its website, as some tracks each year are removed or added after the guide is printed. The guides are not available to mail, so hunters will have to pick one up at a licensed vendor location or print individual maps from the website. In other news, big game hunters are reminded of requirements for transporting deer, elk, and moose carcasses and carcass parts into and within North Dakota as a precaution against the possible spread of chronic wasting disease. Transportation of whole carcasses of deer, elk, moose, or other members of the cervid family into North Dakota from areas within other states and provinces with documented occurrences of CWD is prohibited. Hunters should note that Montana is now included as a state that has big game transport requirements. In addition, hunters harvesting a big game animal in Unit 3F2 in North Dakota cannot transport the whole carcass, including the head and spinal column, outside of the unit. This is a new rule from last year when hunters could take the carcass outside of the unit if it was taken directly to a meat processor within 5 days of harvest. That's this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.